Born and raised in Philadelphia, the city that revolutionized the pro wrestling industry, Jeff Desiato has rekindled his passion for the sport he loved as a child. Join him on his journey to discover what makes pro wrestling such a uniquely enjoyable form of entertainment. This is the Why We Enjoy Wrestling podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the freshly renamed Why We Enjoy Wrestling podcast. My name is Jeff Desiato, and this show is dedicated to analyzing and breaking down what it is that we love about wrestling, specifically WWE wrestling. Maybe we'll branch out at some point, but hopefully you love the clever acronym WWE Wrestling as the podcast, Why We Enjoy Wrestling. And I'm excited. We have King and Queen of the Ring coming up. One of the hardest things about doing this podcast around my full-time work schedule is picking when to do it, because wrestling is a constantly moving product. There's never a break. So it's really challenging for me. I work on Saturdays. What I would love to be able to do is have a Monday Night Raw recap, a Friday Night SmackDown recap, and then be able to do my predictions for whatever the premium live event is, because that would make things a lot cleaner. Unfortunately, I can't do that. So today, as we head into premium live event weekend, King and Queen of the Ring in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, I'm going to be making my King of the Ring predictions with the caveat that Friday Night SmackDown has not taken place yet. There's obviously changes that could be made to the storylines, to where we're heading for the matches, but I'm going to do my best to at least big picture predict what I think is going to happen and what I would like to see happen as we move forward into the summer. We got a lot of premium live events coming up. In three short weeks after King and Queen of the Ring, we have Clash at the Castle, and then another 3 weeks after that, we have Money in the Bank. And then 4 weeks after that, we have SummerSlam. So it's just tons of things to look forward to, tons of storylines being planted. So let's dive in and review the most recent SmackDown. We'll go step by step. The show started with Bianca Belair versus Tiffany Stratton. There was a lot of internet noise about this going into it. I'm not going to get into it very much. I think it was a lot of people complaining about things and impugning motive and trying to be mind readers about why someone would do something or another. I think it was much ado about nothing, as was confirmed by one of the wrestling outlets speaking with someone from WWE, saying that Tiffany Stratton is very well liked and very well respected within the locker room. And, so they tried to kind of put the kibosh on the whole thing. If you don't know what I'm referring to, you can go look it up. But what I will say is I'm not sure if the outcome didn't change because of what was going on. Because I'll get into this, I guess. Like one of the things that I was hoping, I guess, in the back of my mind, is that Tiffany would win, but so that she could start calling herself the queen, which would then be planting the seeds for a potential feud for a returning queen, Charlotte Flair, because there's been a lot of comparisons between Tiffany Stratton, the beautiful blonde athlete, you know, very athletic, very, with the gymnast background and doing the flips and the high flying things that Charlotte Flair was known for when she came onto the scene. And having them go toe-to-toe. And Tiffany Stratton, I listened to her podcast with Chris Van Vliet, and she said that Charlotte Flair was like the main reason she got into wrestling, because she saw a lot of herself saw herself being someone like a Charlotte Flair. So that would be a feud down the road that I would love to see. They did not go that direction. That doesn't mean that wasn't the plan. But what I will say is something that a lot of the wrestling podcasts that I listen to have said, and I thought they were just coming up with it themselves, which was having Tiffany Stratton win the Money in the Bank and having a rhinestone-covered pink briefcase. And That is actually, I didn't realize this, but in Tiffany Stratton's interview with Chris Van Vliet, she mentions that. So I didn't know that. Did she put that out there into the ether, or did she hear the idea from the wrestling world and say, yeah, that's what I want to do? So with that, I will say that I think Tiffany's just beginning. I would love to see her winning the Money in the Bank, because I think it's always better when it's a heel and an obnoxious heel. And also when someone has a defining characteristic, like we had Damian Priest as a part of the Judgment Day, having the purple briefcase and being Senior Money in the Bank, that I feel like that helps with the story. And even though it got lackluster towards the end, it ended up being a phenomenal cash-in at WrestleMania. So I would love to see Tiffany Stratton go on to be the Money in the Bank winner and have her own modified briefcase. I think that would be a lot of fun. That doesn't mean that I don't think that whoever wins the Queen of the Ring is not ultimately being set up to be an opponent for a returning Charlotte Flair, queen versus queen, as it were. So I know she was injured, I believe, in December. She had basically destroyed all the stuff in her knee. So I don't... When Bayley messed up her knee, she was out for over a year. I know some people come back in 9 months. Charlotte Flair is someone who is very, very physically gifted and is very much... she was training for like bodybuilding and I think she was a strength training or strongest woman competitions. I forget what I read a while back. So she may have a regimen that will get her back faster, maybe for SummerSlam. I don't want her to rush back. But anyway, let's talk about... See, this is what's hard. I'm a big picture guy, so I'm always going to interweave what I'm thinking about on the grand scale with the day-to-day matches through SmackDown and Raw, which I guess is maybe that's what this podcast will be. Belair defeated Stratton. She's playing up the knee injury, which I think is setting her up to protect her for a loss in the finals. Or in the semifinals, I should say. It's kind of also confusing because you have like the whole bracket on the SmackDown side and the Raw side, and I think of it as being the finals, but it's actually the semifinals because the finals is between the winner of the SmackDown bracket versus the Raw bracket. So she's selling the knee. She gets the win. So I think she ultimately is going to end up losing to Nia Jax in the semifinals, because that's who I have as the winner. Spoiler alert. So next up, we had LA Knight versus Tama Tonga. I don't like seeing LA Knight take losses, man. I really don't. And it was a distracted loss, which feels like it wasn't protected enough. But I get that you're trying to give credibility to this new faction, etc. One of the things we did see, which I was so excited about, is that Logan Paul and LA Knight bumped into each other. It happened. It's happening. And he said, "What's up, champ?" Planting seeds for hopefully what I want to see, SummerSlam. And I have to remind myself, right? Because we have all these PLEs every 3 weeks, basically. And you're like, come on, you got to start building it. And you realize, like, oh my gosh, they have 3 more PLEs before SummerSlam that they have to build to. And while I like the slow burn build, at the same time, you can't hit too soon on a feud. So I think they're going to time this out right. They planted the seed. I think maybe after Clash at the Castle is when we'll start to see more of it to lead up into SummerSlam. We have like a 6-week build maybe. We'll see. I could be wrong. Maybe it'll all go all the way to Money in the Bank, and that'll be what happens. Maybe LA Knight's going to win the Money in the Bank briefcase again and get screwed by Logan Paul. And that's, I don't know. There's so many things that can happen. But I'm so excited that they planted that seed. Doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen, but that means that they know that there's money to be made there. And I actually just went back. I kind of go through bouts of insomnia occasionally where can't fall asleep. And I went back and watched the WWE playlist, which was the rise of LA Knight. And you see the interactions that the two of them had around Money in the Bank last year. And it was just like, oh my gosh, when they're going, some of the things that LA Knight could say to Logan Paul, I think it's just going to be incredible. And he's going to be right back to being at the top. during that feud. I think they're going to give it time because it's with Logan Paul, and I think it's going to mean a lot more than if they had just crowned him at WrestleMania. I really do. Have it be something that builds. Anyway, all that to say, Tonga defeated Knight and now goes on to face Randy Orton, which we'll get there. I keep spoiling it. You had Carmelo Hayes have a funny interaction with LA Knight backstage, which was really fun. Carmelo Hayes is going to be a great heel on the main roster because he's so arrogant. I talked about that last week. Then we had Nia Jax versus Jade Cargill with Cardgill's daughter at ringside, who played a factor in the match, which explains away how Jade Cargill could get herself disqualified, which was a crappy outcome. And this is why a lot of people, I think, feel that the Tiffany Bianca Belair match was changed because of the uproar. Because they're like, well, what was probably supposed to happen was Tiffany was supposed to go over Bianca, and then you were going to have Jade versus Tiffany. But I don't necessarily believe that now that I think about it. When you start to play out, who's a better Money in the Bank briefcase holder than Tiffany Stratton? And also, she can do well in a Money in the Bank match. So maybe that's just all internet spin, you know? What I will say is, why would you have Nia Jax and Jade Cargill match, which is something that was teased in Royal Rumble? Why would you put that in a tournament and then have a no decision by a disqualification, other than just to tease it, and then they can build off of this disqualification victory for Nia Jax down the road? But it wasn't much. I mean, the crowd was chanting BS. It was not very fun. Let's see. We have moving on. DIY versus Angel Umberto. Not much there. DIY wins. Angel Umberto, I'm really disappointed in Legado del Fantasma because I thought they had so much momentum when Santos turned heel. They had so much momentum, and then they build the new faction and they bring up Electra Lopez, and I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's do this. Let's get Santos to the next level using Rey Mysterio as a stepping stone. And what do? They keep him in this like muddled feud with no decisive winner. And it just feels like everybody's spinning their wheels. And it frustrates me because I think Santos is incredibly talented and could make that jump. I'm not saying he's a world title person, but he's definitely someone who should be challenging for a title. And he should be getting significant victories over people like Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio does not need to win another match in his career, in my opinion. The fact that John Cena hasn't won a televised match since 2018 and Rey Mysterio continues to pick up victories over lesser known talent that have more of their career ahead of them, it's starting to make me turn on Rey Mysterio. I'm starting to side with Santos and Carlito and Dominic against Rey Mysterio. They're starting to make sense when you think about it that way. So I want to see Legado del Fantasma do more. I don't want to see them just being jobbers. We had Austin Theory and Grayson Waller at ringside. We're setting up, obviously, DIY. I don't think that DIY is ready to take the titles off of Theory and Waller. I really don't. They haven't really made the splash on the roster. I would have liked to see them stay on Raw alongside the Awesome Truth and then maybe do a feud with them by turning heel. But yeah, just again, I feel like this is one of my frustrations, I guess, with wrestling is there's too much talent. And I think that's a good problem to have. But I feel like they're constantly, the influx of younger talent is great. But what ends up happening is that no one actually gets the spotlight, and it just starts to feel like everyone's just like middling around. So, because now you have these, they're trying to make these draft picks count, which is great. But then you have people who've been busting their butt and hoping to make that jump and have been doing the work. They're now being asked to put over the next draft. It's like, well, you didn't do that for me when I got drafted up. You know, like it just feels a little chaotic right now. Is that you have so many people on the roster and so little time to feature them. And it's the same few people constantly being featured. Yeah, it's I can see why people get frustrated sometimes when their favorite wrestlers get pushed to the side or don't get the push that you think they deserve. But all that to say, Randy Orton versus Carmelo Hayes, a great match. And then they set up the tease where he did the springboard off the rope and did a move. They set that as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, they're setting up that they're setting that up so that when he tries to do it again, it's going to be turned into an RKO. And I was correct. So my last 4 years of wrestling viewing is starting to pay off. I'm starting to see things and predict things and understand how they're telling the story. So that's good. So Orton wins. Quick mention, AJ Styles gave an interview backstage about how he feels directionless and he's going to go talk to Nick Aldis, which is funny because he flew all the way to Australia just to interfere in the match and mess up LA Knight. Now he's going to fly all the way to Saudi Arabia just to have a conversation with Nick Aldis on SmackDown. I think that's kind of humorous. That's going to be, is that like his new gimmick? Is like he's the guy that travels the world to air his grievances? I don't know. We had the Bloodline come out at the end, try to get the best, and then Randy Orton left cut a promo on them to end SmackDown. So that left us with Randy Orton versus Tama Tonga in the semifinals, Nia Jax versus Bianca Belair in the semifinals, and for those matches, I believe Randy Orton's going to win so that he's the one that challenges the winner from the Raw side, and I think that Nia Jax is going to beat Bianca Belair because they're going to sell the knee to protect Bianca Belair. I'm probably in the minority here, but I feel like Bianca Belair is getting the Super Cena treatment. She can't afford to take a loss at this point, and it concerns me that you have her with a severely injured knee still being overcome talent, you know, storyline-wise, severely injured knee, overcoming talent. I think it buries the talent that she beats when it's like you can't even beat somebody who can't even stand on two legs. They did the same thing. This was one of my really frustrating things, and this it ended up being the Io Sky cash-in, right? But I remember the triple threat match with Charlotte Flair, Asuka, and Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair is selling the crap out of this knee. She can barely stand, but she sure has enough strength to do a like 360 splash or 450 splash off the top rope and win. And that, I think, in a way, buries the other talent. Because I understand selling a knee to protect somebody in a loss, but to sell an injury and then be the one who wins, I don't know. That feels a little, I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority there, like I said. I would like to see what happens with this Nia Jax match. I think Nia Jax is going to win and ultimately be the queen of the ring, and we're going to be referring to her as Queen Nia for some time, which would then also set up Charlotte Flair's return, in my opinion, and that would be a great queen versus queen match, maybe for SummerSlam, like I said. So let's move over to Raw. Raw is hard because there's so much, and as I've mentioned in the past, I don't see every minute of Raw because I watch the condensed version on Hulu. But anyway, we started off with Sami Zayn. Always a great way to start off a Monday Night Raw. And he said Chad Gable's name, gave the match breakdown that we have coming up at King and Queen of the Ring, set the stakes. Gable interrupts and berates Alpha Academy, and then the match goes on. I don't remember them saying it's a non-title match, which is interesting. I feel like they would have said that more overtly. It would have they didn't say that because they didn't want to be like, oh, well, then we know the outcome. But at the same time, it's always confusing if they don't say it's a non-title match and then the person who the challenger wins and you're like, wait a minute, shouldn't he have the title? Shouldn't they be saying and new Intercontinental Champion? That's one of those weird details that I don't quite pick up on all the time. So we had a match back and forth. Gable was obviously trying to get every member of Alpha Academy to interfere, and they were all torn emotionally. They didn't want to go to the dark side, so he ends up dismissing Akira Tozawa and Maxine Dupree. Heel Gable is fun. I think it's going to be really good. We also saw him tease with the Creed brothers later on in the episode, which was awesome. Or maybe it was later on. And he just, oh man, like the moment of... so anyway, Gable wins. After Otis doesn't interfere and then decides to interfere, you can see that he feels terrible about it, even when he does it. Gable picks up the win, and then him at the end of the match, I was laughing. He's doing his thank you, and he's saying, "I did this. I did this." And he's just slowly creeping in front of Otis in the camera shot. Oh, my gosh. It was so funny. It reminded me of the moment in Thor, Love and Thunder, if you watch that movie, where Star-Lord is talking about the people that he cares about, and he's looking at the Guardians, and Thor is just, like, creeping into his line of sight, and it just made me, it kind of brought back that feeling, and it's really humorous. I really like this. I would love to see Gable get a singles run, a singles title, sooner rather than later, but there's a lot of people who deserve singles titles. Jey Uso, LA Knight, you know, like, so it's hard. There's not enough belts to go around, and we don't want them to become AEW and have a belt for, you know, best trunks or, you know, best boots or whatever. I don't know. I don't mean to throw friendly fire or whatever at AEW. Their existence helps WWE be better, in my opinion. So all the power to them. Let's move on. Sorry, let me just adjust my computer here. Moving on, we had the storyline with Bron Breakker, which was interesting, where he's becoming like Goldberg, basically, or Brock Lesnar, which makes sense. But what I found really funny was, you know, you have the enhancement talent and he's just getting destroyed. And you have the wrestling security, which is the most pointless thing in existence because they can never stop anybody from doing anything. But this was basically just a squash match, which then led to Bron Breakker being this complete destroyer. And he ends up sending this guy, Kale Dixon, to the hospital and blames Adam Pearce for it. So it's Adam Pearce's fault that Kale Dixon is in the hospital because he has not given Braun the opportunities since he ended up drafting him. I wonder, it would be really interesting if he starts to say openly, like, "I was supposed to be on SmackDown. I signed to SmackDown. And then you took me to Raw and you're doing nothing with me." That would be interesting to kind of see some storyline like that. Maybe you involve Nick Aldis in that, et cetera, et cetera. That would be pretty interesting. I'm wondering, it would be kind of interesting if they end up trading AJ Styles for Bron Breakker. Because AJ Styles is like, he could use a fresh coat of paint by going to Raw. He's already, you know, feuded and had matches with all the top guys on SmackDown. And it would be cool to see him on Raw. Maybe you put Bron Breakker on SmackDown. I don't know. Which would then, I don't know why you wouldn't have just drafted him there. Then, if they do that, maybe you reunite the Wolf Dogs with Baron Corbin. Maybe they're realizing, like, that's what we need to do. And they're pivoting. Who knows? That's just my thoughts as they come to me. So don't hold me to that. Semifinal, Lyra Valkyria versus Io Sky. This was a great match. And Valkyria picks up the win, which they're really pushing her. And there's some storyline happening with Becky Lynch and ultimately Liv Morgan. Perhaps if Liv Morgan is going to take the title off of Becky Lynch at King and Queen of the Ring, they're doing a very good job of setting up Lyra Valkyria as the potential feud, the first babyface to challenge Liv Morgan. So I like that they're doing this. I like that they're thinking 2, 3, 4 steps ahead, even though the audience isn't used to it, and sometimes they get out over their skis because they see something and they're like, "Why didn't they do this?" And then you realize it's like, just wait, let them cook, as they say. Let me see here, moving down. Great moment. I really enjoyed this moment backstage with Carlito and the Judgment Day and Finn Balor. There was a moment that I don't know if people have talked about it that much, but the moment where Finn Balor hangs back and says to Damian, "There's something that, you know, something in me that feels like it should be us out there." And you're seeing the relationship, the brotherhood of Finn Balor and Damian Priest. And Damian Priest really appreciates the fact that Finn Balor says that, even though there's nothing he can do about it. They're teasing. They're planting seeds. This is really good. And I feel like this is good. That was intentional. It wasn't a throwaway comment. They're going to come back to that. Finn Balor is going to say, "We used to be a team. You and I. We were the Judgment Day first. And now you're moving on ahead of me." And that's going to be the way you get to a Finn Balor Damian Priest match. But we're running out of time for that, which makes me scared, terrified even, that we're not going to get a Drew McIntyre victory at Clash at the Castle. That scares the bejesus out of me, because that would be devastating. Like, oh man, unless Drew McIntyre is super on board with where he's headed and eventually he will get that big victory and be crowned the top guy on Raw, that would be devastating to actually put the place, the pay-per-view in Scotland, in his actual home country, and have him lose again. That would be brutal. I really hope they don't do that. But all that to say, the Judgment Day seems to be falling apart. What I would love to see, I think we have Finn and JD spinoff. We have Carlito and Dom spinoff, and then Damian's by himself, Rhea's by herself. That's where I think we're ultimately heading. Awesome Truth ends up picking up the victory. Carlito interfered, so I like the establishment of Carlito. He's so much, seems so much more comfortable since he's turned heel. He's funny. Like, I actually am enjoying him. He's like got this, like, you know, just funny way about him that he seemed completely stone-faced when he was with LWO. Like, he had no purpose whatsoever. Maybe they were just doing the long game. I don't know. But now he seems relaxed. He seems funny, charismatic, all of that stuff. So I'm really here for heel Carlito. Backstage, Bron Breakker ends up spearing Ricochet and Ilya Dragunov. So we'll see what happens with that. Gunther cut a promo in an empty arena, which was an interesting choice. And I love that we're seeing new production techniques and new things. One of the things I thought was really fun was at one point they went to commercial and it was like a football game where the way they went to commercial, instead of just having the typical thing where, like, oh, someone gets knocked out of the outside of the ring and we're going to get really close on them while they're like, that was always the way they went to commercial before. Now they replayed in slow motion a move that just happened, similar to the way that, like, the NFL will go to commercial with a replay of a big play that just happened. And I thought that was really cool. It legitimized the product in a way, in my mind, in the same way that when they go to commercial after the ring entrance, that they do with, like, the nice little package, animated graphics and things like that. Like, these kinds of things need to keep happening. It's great. Damian Priest was happy for Carlito. I forgot one moment. We had this long shot with Cruz del Toro ended up getting hurt, and we found out it was Carlito. Sonya Deville made her return, which she's got an MMA background. It'll be interesting to see her. I saw some people theorizing she could be a mouthpiece for Zoe Stark and Shayna Baszler. I think that's good, because I think that's the shortcoming of Zoe Stark and Shayna Baszler is their mic work. So having someone like Sonya Deville, who has been a personality on the product, mainly as a mouthpiece, as the general manager and stuff like that, I think that could be a good pairing. And you also had, they used to be, Shayna and Sonya used to be a tag team at one point. So there's a lot of history there. Be interesting to see if they interact with Chelsea Green, because Sonya had been in the tag team with Chelsea Green and had won the tag titles, if I'm not mistaken, and got hurt before Piper Niven. Was she part of the tag team? I can't remember the timeline if they won the tag titles with Sonya, but I believe that's the case. And then Piper Niven just showed up and was like, yeah, now I'm here too. Anyway, Becky Lynch comes out. Liv Morgan interrupts her. They got to put the title on Liv just because this is the most interesting story on the female roster, in my opinion. They're really investing a lot into it. So it would be really interesting. I also haven't seen much about the Dominic developments, which maybe they're slow burning that as well. I'm interested to see if maybe Dominic plays a factor in the King and Queen of the Ring match. That would be crazy. Absolutely crazy if, like, Becky loses because Dominic gets involved, and then you have this big moment where Liv and Dominic embrace, and you're like, oh my gosh. You know, I'm wanting King and the Queen of the Ring to be all about big moments, right? We want this Uncle Howdy faction to premiere. I mean, I know I'm ready. They've been doing the QR codes. They had the Twitch takeover. They've had so many things. I haven't really talked about that stuff because it's not... I think you guys can do your own deep dives into that. Not Sam Wrestling talked about it. You know, you can definitely find people who give their thoughts on what all the clues mean and everything like that. But I think they will debut at the end of King and Queen of the Ring. But I also would love to see Because one of the things I think wrestling fans get annoying because they're like, oh, it's a lull. Like, nothing's happening, right? It's like, well, we just have WrestleMania. They're not trying to make it not interesting. That's not the goal of the company. Maybe when it was Vince McMahon, that was the goal of the company, but they're not trying for it to not be interesting. But what happens when you have payoffs at WrestleMania is you got to start somewhere else. These storylines that you've been familiar with for months are over. So you need to start and you have to connect to new people, to new storylines, to new motivations. And that takes time. So especially when you have this like plethora of PLEs that you're trying to plant seeds for. And then you are also thinking like, okay, we have SmackDown, we have SummerSlam down the road, and we have Survivor Series. We'll see if they do a War Games match again. I'm not sure. I think you could see a Bloodline versus Bloodline War Games match down the road. Just want to put that out there. I think that would be phenomenal. I think we need Jacob Fatu to be the fourth man for the new Bloodline. And I think what we need to see is Roman Reigns reunite with the Usos, and they need a fourth person. Who is that fourth person? Sami Zayn. That's what I think would be the best story that they could do to resolve this chapter of the new Bloodline saga. But that's a long time from now. That's 6 months from now. So like, there's time to build that stuff. I don't want to get ahead of myself. But Bronson Reed approached Sami Zayn, said, I'm going to take the title, blah, blah, blah. And then Otis, interesting, Otis apologized to Sami Zayn. So they're keeping the crowd, and the crowd is chanting, Otis, Otis. The crowd loves Otis. I don't think he could ever be a heel. He's that type of guy. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that. That was really interesting. Sorry. Tag team number one contenders match. I didn't actually see this match. This is one of the ones that was cut off of the Hulu product. And we had, not surprisingly, Baszler and Stark defeat the other women. So we're going to see them as challengers to Bianca and Jade eventually, perhaps. One of the things I have to remember is that the tag titles can go to both brands. So even though Bianca and Jade are on SmackDown, they can come to Raw to defend their titles, which they will do eventually against Baszler and Stark. And I think what you'll probably see them lose, and then Sonya Deville will say, like, hey, you need me in your corner or whatever. Then we had the semifinal, Jey Uso versus Gunther. And the way they timed out this match was incredible. I'm always amazed. Not only are wrestlers improv specialists, not only are they stuntmen, not only are they actors, but they also have to be broadcasters in the sense that they need to be able to time out their promos and their matches so that they go off the air at the right time. And I know that the referee's telling them and stuff, but it's still amazing. The fact that you have, you know, million eyeballs watching this product and you have the result of the match happen right before it goes off the air. Like, that's just impressive to me. That's what I took away from it. Anyway, great match, and Gunther wins. So we have Gunther challenging, or he's in the finals. So this was the go-home Raw. I forgot to mention that. This was the go-home Raw. So this is Gunther in the finals of the King and Queen of the Ring. And then the semifinals on the SmackDown, we have Tama Tonga versus Randy Orton. So quickly, I just want to recap. Oh, I forgot to mention also that Braun Strowman involved himself in the match between Awesome Truth and the Judgment Day. So we'll see if we have Braun Strowman as a potential. Yeah, now I'm starting to see this stuff. I'm starting to think that Drew's not winning the title at Clash of the Castle because I feel like they're setting up defenders or challengers to Damian Priest, Braun Strowman being one of them, by his involvement here against the Judgment Day. And maybe I'm wrong, but that will disappoint me very much so. Very much so. But anyway, where did I leave off? I got so frustrated with myself for putting those pieces together. But anyway, we have the setup for what we have SmackDown this week. And we have Nia Jax versus Bianca Belair. I think that Nia Jax is going to win. I think we're going to have Nia Jax beat Lyra Valkyria, obviously. No Shame to Lie for Valkyria, if you're going to get, she's going to get squashed by Nia Jax. We're going to have Queen Nia Jax. That's my prediction for that match. My prediction for the Intercontinental Triple Threat is, in some way, we have Otis try to get involved, decide not to, turn on Chad Gable. Sammy's going to retain. Otis is going to end up walking away from Chad Gable. I think we're going to have... I'm trying to think. What are the other matches? Have they announced all the matches? I'm not sure. I'm thinking about this. Randy Orton versus Gunther. Gunther's going to win. So we're going to have Nia and Gunther as the King and Queen of the Ring, which I think is really good. You got to have some dominant forces there that are actual threats, credible opponents for the champions. What are the other matches? I think Liv Morgan is going to win, probably through cheating. Maybe Dominic gets involved there. What are the other matches? This is really going to bother me. That's really all of the matches I can think of right now. So we'll get the final match list, obviously, after SmackDown on Friday. But I'm excited for this King and Queen of the Ring. I think it's going to be better than Backlash, even though the audience was so good. I think from a storyline perspective, I think it could be better. Because Backlash always feels like kind of like a one and done in a way. But, yeah, I think I'm just going to leave it there. I don't have much else to discuss. And I've gone 36 minutes, which is surprising. So, thanks a lot for tuning in. I hope you will come back next week as we discuss more about what we love about wrestling. So get out there and enjoy wrestling.